This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD. Online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
Good evening and welcome to a WATD Political Forum. I'm your moderator, Christine James, and I'm joined by WATD reporter Tom Gorman asking questions tonight. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening.
This election is for state rep for the 1st Plymouth District. We have both candidates here in studio. We've got Democrat Michelle Badger. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
And Republican Jesse Brown in studio. They're here to answer questions tonight. Tommy, you all is our own Charles Fulmer, and we're joined by our media partner, Local Scene, PAC-TV. Now, our format is simple. We've asked the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready, no longer than 2 minutes for the open and 1 minute close, please. Then we have a round of questions from the reporters with the answers limited to a minute. Then a lightning round where answers are either yes or no or two sentences tops. We always say, please try to keep your answers to around a minute. If you consistently go over, ramble, or start to repeat yourself, then you get, there she is, the bell, that friendly-looking bell that really rules the night here. Charles Fulmer timing you all with the traditional construction paper there, and we have green is go, yellow is you've got 10 seconds, and red means stop. When we get to red, if you're still talking, you get the 5 second grace countdown. And then if you're still talking, you get the bell. And if you're still talking after that, then we cut the mic. We rarely have to do that, but I just like to warn people. And don't forget, too, we also have the lightning round. That is where you will either answer yes or no to a question or one or two sentences. We will decide as reporters what we want you to say. So again, as you know, you've been here before. That's our favorite part because we find people running for office. It's very hard to say one or two words, probably in life, but probably tougher in politics. So good evening, and let's get started here. Tom Gorman, first question for our candidates.
Did you open?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Open, I'm sorry. See, you know the format better than I do. Okay, and we pulled the names out of the stand-in koozie here, and the opening statement, see, maybe you should be running this. Maybe the opening statement is from Jesse Brown, and then we're going to go to Michelle. Thank you.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's a privilege to be here tonight to discuss the issues facing the residents of the 1st Plymouth District. Huge thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to 95.9, and thank you to WATD and our host for putting together tonight's forum, and to Ms. Badger to my left for attending. My name is Jesse Brown, your Republican nominee to be your state representative in the 1st Plymouth District. I proudly served our country in the United States Marine Corps, and to all of our veterans out there, thank you for your service. Through hard work, my business partner and I created a successful telecommunications construction business with over 50 employees that has kept people employed for almost 18 years. Co-founded a nonprofit that has helped countless veterans in need, a proud father of a beautiful, independent 17-year-old daughter. I am 46 years old and a 25-year resident of Plymouth, residing in our home in the Manomet area. Member of the Marine Corps League and Veterans of Foreign Wars, proudly sat on the executive board for many years of the Plymouth Chamber of Commerce and prior member of the Massachusetts Labor Workforce Development Board. To all of our listeners out there, I don't want to be crystal clear. My commitment is to represent the interests of our residents and advocate tirelessly for the 1st Plymouth District. Tonight we will talk about what truly affects our community: affordability, sky-high cost of living, migrant crisis that's created unsustainable costs, lack of transparency in our own state government, fostering economic growth in Plymouth while protecting its natural resources, and giving our first responders the tools and support they need and deserve. As your state representative for the 1st Plymouth District, you will have a person that will be effective, focused, reliable, and will work on solutions for the issues we face. Our pledge, Massachusetts residents' interest will always come first. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the opening statement for Jesse Brown, the Republican candidate. Now the opening statement for Michelle Badger, the Democrat.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you, WATD, Local Scene, and everyone listening tonight. I'm Michelle Badger, and I'm running as a Democratic candidate to be your next state representative in the 1st Plymouth District. I grew up in Plymouth and graduated from Plymouth South High School, and in 2006, I earned my degree from Sweetbriar College. In 2010, I earned a dual master's degree in public administration and political science from Suffolk University, and that marked me beginning to get involved in our community when I joined Plymouth No Place for Hate. My professional background is as a higher education fundraiser, and I currently serve as the Vice President of Institutional Advancement at Massasoit Community College. Prior to that, I was the Director of Advancement for Massachusetts Maritime Academy. I'm currently the Chair of the Plymouth School Committee and am honored to be in my 13th year of service to the committee. During that time, I've led important initiatives, built consensus, coalitions to accomplish goals with the people of diverse thoughts, opinions, and parties. Some of my many accomplishments include enhancing translation services, implementing full-day kindergarten, and revamping our elementary school health curriculum. I'm passionate about service in Plymouth, and I'm driven by the belief that we rise by lifting others. All that I do is in service with the hope of helping and positively affecting others' lives. I'm running for state representative to ensure that people of all ages can remain and thrive in Plymouth. My priorities are working hard to create more affordability in housing, bring back more resources for our schools, seniors, public safety, transportation, and more, create sustainable economic development in our community, and ensure reproductive rights for all are upheld. As your next state representative, I'm dedicated to this as my full-time job. I'm committed to the people of the First Plymouth District, and that's why I've knocked on over 5,600 doors and that we've earned the endorsements of a number of unions, towns, county, and state officials. If elected, I'll be honored to serve and advocate for the residents of the First Plymouth District, and will work hard to find solutions to the concerns and challenges that face our community. I humbly ask for your vote on or before November 5th.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Michelle Badger. Now we're going to go to our questions. Tom Gorman, first question for both candidates.
Well, the migrant issue has become a major concern right here on the South Shore. What are your thoughts about that, and how should it be addressed?
Let's begin with Michelle.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really important that we remember that we're all human beings, and we could all be in a situation like we find our migrant population, our immigrant population, right? And so I think we need to come together and we need to find those solutions. And a lot of it comes from the federal government. There's not a lot that we can do except for what our governor is doing. And she and the legislature are looking at it and saying, okay, we have fixed costs. We only have so much money. How do we use that pie and be able to help these families? How do we get them, you know, how do we get them into jobs? How do we get them into housing? And how do we get them self-sufficient? That's really important. We need to make sure that we're doing that, but taking care of our residents as well. Our veterans are important. Thank you, Jesse, for your service. Very important, making sure that they have the housing and they have all that we're continuing to educate them, making sure that there's English language learner possibilities, that they can learn English to get fully engaged in our community. But it's going to take a lot of people, but it's really a federal issue when you look at it from the top.
Okay, same question, Jesse.
The one thing I will agree with her, that it is a federal issue, but the state can do a lot of things, and number one right now is change the right to shelter law and change the residency requirements right off the top. Obviously, the other thing is the housing that we're giving to the illegal immigrants right now is over $1 billion that is coming out of our pockets. It's $3 billion a year that we are giving to illegal immigrants, with $1 billion that's going to be for the next year's coming. I printed out something today, and there was too many sheets to list, but what we're not talking about with the migrant crisis is the migrant crime that comes from that, which will be another important issue that we talk about, is supporting our law enforcement and make sure they get their proper funding. But I can just read you a few here where ICE agents arrest Salvadorian national charged with raping Nantucket child. Boston agents arrest Guatemalan child, sex offender, after Massachusetts courts release him. Haitian national charged with sexually assaulting minor. ICE arrests two accused of raping Massachusetts girls. This is just in this year alone, and it's consistently, this is just in the paper. And we hear that's just affecting our children that are getting raped by these illegal immigrants out there. So that's the next step to this migrant issue, is the migrant crime. We've got over 50,000 migrants that are here right now.
So just let me ask you a follow-up. Do you have a follow-up? Because I was just, this is, you both have strong opinions about this. How likely do you think it would be, because it seems like there's people on both sides of the issue here, this is bipartisan, that would like to repeal that right to shelter law. How likely do you think that's actually going to happen in the state legislature, Jesse?
I think it's extremely likely to repeal that and to change, not just to repeal it, but even just to change the residency requirements to that. I think it's extremely likely that will happen. It has to happen. Okay. The costs are unsustainable right now.
Michelle, same question. How likely do you think they would be to repeal that?
I don't think you'd do that. I mean, we have the opportunity on the federal level. We had a bipartisan agreement in that we have a certain presidential candidate who determined that he did not want that to pass. And so there are ways that we could have fixed it. We can fix it on the federal level. And I think on the state level, we are remembering that these are human beings and nobody is illegal. And so we need to make sure that they have the housing that they need, they have what they need. But how do we make that time shorter? And that's what Governor Healey has done, and her administration have said, all right, let's let's see what we can do with what we have, but we need to make sure that these people can become active and, you know, participatory members of our society. And how we do it is through education and jobs and housing. It gives you your basic needs and then people fly. It's just like what we do with our own population, those who are homeless and those who are struggling. We make sure that they have the resources they need and then they fly and they do well and they're able to take on, they're able to get their job. They're able to do, to be active and members of society.
Let me ask you a follow-up question.
Yeah.
How's that all going to be paid for?
You know, I think that's something we have to look at. And I think what Governor Healey is doing by saying this is what we have and this is all we can do, then we just continually shrink that. You know, is it 3 months and then they get the 6 month extension? Is it, I mean, the month-to-month extensions? How do we do that? That's something that needs to be looked at. And we need a bipartisan agreement and bipartisan work, because I believe nothing can be done on one party. You have to make sure that we bring everybody together. It's about figuring out this issue that we have, but it's more about the idea of nobody is illegal, everyone's a person, and we do need people to build up our economy. There are jobs that our own residents might not want to take or that we need help with. So I think we need, if you look at our population growth, we need the immigration to ensure that we continue to grow in a population throughout the state. I forget, is it like 2 million? I can't remember the number. I don't want to be wrong, but.
Now, while we're on numbers here, I want to ask another question. We keep hearing about people leaving the state because it's really, it's a great place to live. But real estate is very high. The cost of living is high. Again, there's a lot of positive things, but you hear about, especially younger generation.
Yeah.
You know, even when I think it was one of the state senators here, was John Keenan had mentioned, I think it was his son got, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure he'll correct me, I think his son got a place in, I believe it was Nashville or Memphis, one of those places, because he could live for about half the price here. Mm-hmm. And a wonderful, you know, it was a wonderful life with a great apartment he could rent with all these amenities, and actually could do it on a lower level, kind of an entry level job. Michelle, what do you think? How can we stop people from leaving the state?
You know, I think they're doing a lot of work on that with our Executive Office of Housing and Livable Communities. What can we do to make sure that we're looking at, so HUD, how HUD decides how much an affordable housing is based off of Boston. I know they're doing work on that, trying to make sure that we can have actual affordable housing, because right now we don't. We can all agree, I believe, that we don't have real affordable housing in our community. The 80% is not what it needs to be. You know, you've got the average Plymouth home is over $616,000. And it's impossible for young people and everyone in between to be able to afford to live here with every other piece. So what are we looking at? We're looking at making sure that we're continuing to build on the Affordable Homes Act. I think the $5.4 billion, there's so much in that that can help seasonal communities like ours, where we have housing seasonable workers, and some of that includes teachers and our public service and our public safety residents. We have a Plymouth master planning process that I think we can really start looking at as they build that plan out in the next 10 months, and then the first year for the year for the entire plan. So I'll tell you.
Okay, Jesse, how do we stop these people that are leaving Massachusetts? How do we stop them?
Well, number one is we have the millionaire's tax that went into effect. It's the extra 4%. So there's the high net earners that are leaving the state in droves. So the millionaire's tax, which I think we got this year, was, and again, I think it was $2.2 billion. It's kind of like a sugar high because it was the first year of it. Next year, that's going to substantially drop down because people are going to leave. The people that have the money will leave the state, where you're going to pay a 9% tax when you can go to other states and pay zero or much lower. So that's number one. You need to repeal the millionaire's tax, that, or as they call it, the fair amendment tax, which it's not, because it's not really going. They put money into reserve where it's supposed to be going to schooling and transportation. Only a fraction of that went to it this year. You know, and one of the things that we're not going to do is actually the transfer fee that they proposed earlier on, where they want to, it's basically another tax on homeowners for this affordable housing. They think taxing a homeowner to sell a house over $1 million, either 0.5 or 2% over a $1 million house, is going to solve, where it goes back to local aid. I think we all know what the meals tax is. It was the same exact thing, how the meal tax got passed, and everybody pays for it, and it goes back to the town. So, sorry.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break here. You're listening to a political forum. It's the First Plymouth District. If you're not sure exactly what that is, it's all within the town of Plymouth. Precincts 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. We'll be back right after this.
In a world filled with chaos and stress, the only option is Everything Pumpkin.
Behold the Mighty Pumpkin. It is more than just a gourd. And beginning September 29th, you can lose your gourd at UCC Norwell's Pumpkin Patch Paradise. Join us for our annual youth programming fundraiser beginning this Sunday at 460 Main Street in Norwell.
This is a message from the Hull Lifesaving Museum. Get ready for an unforgettable evening at the Storm Riders Festival on Saturday, September 28th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Hull Lifesaving Museum. It will be the perfect opportunity to gather with friends and neighbors for a night of fun and community spirit. The combination of great food, drinks, and music will make this an evening you won't want to miss. Tickets are $40 per person. Go to hulllifesavingmuseum.org.
Join the Bridgewater Business Association at the 35th Annual Autumn Fest on Saturday, September 28th at Bridgewater State University Quadrangle. Festivities start at 10 a.m. with a vendor fair, food trucks, petting zoo, train rides, kids' activities, the Black Hat Brew Works Beer Garden, demonstrations by the Bridgewater Fire and Police Departments, and live music with John Belutis, Jeff Rosen, and Vicki Lynch and Carlos Ramos. Hope to see you at Autumn Fest, September 28th on the Quad at Bridgewater State University.
WATD's political forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
We're back. That's right, in studio, the 1st Plymouth District. Both candidates are here. We've got Republican Jesse Brown, Democrat Michelle Badger. They both want your vote on November 5th or earlier, if you're early voting or mailing it in. We were just finishing up our question before we went to the break, and I think Tom Gorman, questions for the candidates you wanted to ask.
What do you think is the biggest issue facing a district?
Start with Jesse.
The two things from door knocking, I mean, we just talked about a little bit that it's the two top issues, what we just discussed right here. So I think you hear that everywhere is affordability and the migrant issue. Those are the number two things. So obviously we see Plymouth, as we talked about, it costs $116,000 for a single person here to live comfortably. And I'm doing an air quotes to live comfortably here in Massachusetts, and over $300,000 as a family to live comfortably in Massachusetts. It's unsustainable for everybody in the community. We have seniors that are getting forced out of their homes because of high taxes. They can't afford it because they're on fixed incomes. We hear this on a constant basis. It's, as we said, the younger generation, as we were talking earlier in here, the 18 to 24 group, they can't afford a home. And we talk about affordable housing, we're going into ADUs. We shouldn't be sitting here and having our young people aspire to live on their parents' property. They should be able to get their own home and make that affordable. So there are many things that we can do to do that. You know, we have to always keep every option on the table. But going back again to the migrant crisis, that is a big issue because it's taken local resources from all our public funding.
Same question, Michelle Badger.
Yeah, from knocking on doors for me, we've heard a lot about the affordability here. You know, it's the same thing. You're hearing it from the seniors' perspective. You're hearing it from parents who are nervous that their students, their family, their kids won't be able to return back to Plymouth or live in Plymouth without living at home with them. But, you know, I think there's a lot of ways that we can address that. We've got to look at, we're really excited about in Plymouth, we just passed the ADUs. I think that's a really exciting thing, but that is not achievable for everyone. It's expensive. So how do we look at considering maybe take municipalities acquiring property for the sole purpose of affordable housing and creating housing, which lowers your percentage, the cost at the top by 30%. So how do we do that? Looking at seniors, making sure that seniors have a place that the senior circuit breaker. And, you know, another piece too is our highest growing population of homeless people, when we're thinking about what's affordability mean, is widowed older women. And so we need to figure out how we keep everybody in their homes, and it's a long process to figure that out, but we'll get a lot of ideas.
And did you have a follow-up for that?
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about high taxes. Massachusetts is known as Taxachusetts. Mm-hmm. And why do you think that is? And what can be done to reduce taxes here in the state?
Let's start with you, Michelle.
You know, I think, reducing the taxes, I think, is a... You know, I don't think we're ever going to reduce. You know, I don't think anybody is ever going to say that. But I think what we need to look at is the unfunded mandates that we have across that are pushing that onto the communities. Because if you look at anything that infrastructure that comes from the state funding, there's a lot of unfunded mandates that come with that grant funding. If you look at education, for me on the school committee, we have millions of dollars worth of unfunded mandates. So that increases our taxes right there because we have to find a way to pay for that. We need to look at how we can be smart about like what we're doing in Plymouth with the, I know I mentioned it before, but we're doing that master planning process, looking at our master planning process and saying, where can we put housing and where can we put industry? For Plymouth, we need to bring more industry in that's going to help offset the taxes. That's really the biggest thing for Plymouth. We have put a lot on the residents' back and we need to remove a lot of that taxes from there.
Same question, Jesse.
We definitely need to bring industry back in to bring the tax rate down, but I will say that we need to reduce taxes. We have plenty of them that we can reduce. I mean, number one is the sales tax from 6.25% to 5%. We definitely have to do. We have a gas tax that's at in the 20 cents range that can be reduced. We have enough money in the budget that we can do all the things that we need to do, but we have to balance that budget. I can give one example that I've given over and over. We pay over $700,000 a year for per mile of road, where New Hampshire pays around $250,000 per year for road. Why is that? There's reasons why. I mean, we all know what the reasons are, but we can reduce that. So the money is there, and we don't have to put the burden on all the taxpayers to constantly fund these things. One thing I always laugh at, Deval Patrick once said, he goes, oh, you know, this one little tax right here, it's like a cup of coffee. Well, I don't drink 72 cups of coffee a day after he said it multiple times. I mean, this is crazy. So there are taxes that we can take out of there.
Okay. Did you have a follow-up on that? Let's talk a little bit about recycling. We'll just switch topics a little bit. NIPS. It's a fun word to say, a real pain to clean up. Several communities have instituted NIPS bans. Others have tried to do so and failed. What's the solution, Jesse?
The solution is not to ban it, number one. There shouldn't be a NIP ban on top of all. Yes, there's trash, as you want to say, or that goes everywhere. It's more education on it, not to throw it out. I mean, there's multiple reasons why you see the NIPs, why they're there. I mean, it could be for drunk driving. It could be for people drinking and driving, and maybe that would go down. But at the end of the day, there's no reason to ban NIPs.
Okay. Michelle,
I think if we ban NIPS, we ban them statewide. I think community by community that we saw, you know, we just had one in Plymouth where that was shot down and voted down by the in January. And so I think if you're going to make that decision, it needs to be statewide, because someone can just go to your neighboring town and get that same NIP that they would have gotten 5 minutes away in your community. And so it's important that we look there. But otherwise, in the environment, we have so many other pieces that we need to be looking at. You know, we need to be looking at the PFAS chemicals that are leaching into our water. We've got so many things that the climate resiliency within our community we need to be looking at. We've got the increased acidification of our water. We've got erosion throughout our community, homes that could fall into the ocean. We need to make sure that we are really looking at climate resiliency and investing in our blue economy, which is really important and is really vital to Plymouth in everything that we do.
Let me ask you another follow-up question about plastic. Single-use plastic water bottles, banned or not, what's the solution? They're taking into account things like some communities have banned them. It's not statewide. It's here and there. Mm-hmm. But how do you take into account things like emergencies with town water supplies, mm-hmm. where the towns have actually had bottles of plastic water, plastic bottles of water that they're giving out when the town water, like say in Pembroke, they've had a few episodes mm-hmm. like this. Or what about responding to fire scenes when they come and they show up and they help the first responders and people that are there? So do you ban it? Do you not ban it? What's the solution, Michelle?
I mean, there's other ways it doesn't have to be a plastic water bottle. I know it. I know the state and all the executive branches, and I know at Massasoit, we no longer have water bottles. We have boxes, but I guess maybe that's the best way to term it, but it's water in a box. It comes in a box, just like a juice box. And so that's an option that also carries and will be something you could take to a fire, you could take to an emergency. But I think that banning a plastic water bottle in one community be tough. It's just like when we did the plastic bag ban. You know, like, I think it's great that we use our recycled bags. I have my whole back of my car is full with more recycled bags than one ever probably needs an entire lifetime, but it's good for the environment. And so if we make those commitments in the statewide, I think it makes more sense than just town by town.
Okay. What about you, Jesse? What do you think?
I just think the word ban in general is not a word that I will use very much. And if we're talking about banning there's a lot of different issues out there than banning plastic water bottles. I think there's a lot more important things that people need to be worrying about. People can't put food on their tables right now. They're going to the grocery store and not being able to, they're buying four days of food when they need seven for their family and trying to stretch it out. So those are the things we need to be focusing on, especially being up at the State House, is if we're talking about banning plastic water bottles, there's a problem up there right now. So I'm going up there to focus on the issues that are most important to our constituents in the First Plymouth District.
Okay. We're going to take another quick break and be back right after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly with Veterinary Chaplaincy Services. Our mission is to support people after pet loss. If you're looking for support after losing your special companion, please visit our website at veterinarychaplaincy.com or call or text our new warm line at 833-4-VET-CHAP. That's 833-483-8247. 833-483-8247.
Brockton's sesquicentennial celebration continues with the Brockton Fall Festival on Saturday, October 12th at City Hall Plaza from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. This free, family-friendly event includes retail and nonprofit vendors, children's activities, entertainment, food, fun, and live music with Keanu Trinidad, Vicki Lynch, and Renee Ann Band. Hope to see you on Saturday, October 12th at City Hall Plaza as we celebrate the community spirit of Brockton at the Brockton Fall Festival.
In a world filled with chaos and stress, the only option is Everything Pumpkin. Behold the mighty pumpkin. It is more than just a gourd. And beginning September 29th, you can lose your gourd at UCC Norwell's Pumpkin Patch Paradise. Join us for our annual youth programming fundraiser beginning this Sunday at 460 Main Street in Norwell.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. And it's also a vital service that provides important emergency information when your community needs it most. Tell Congress you need AM Radio to stay in your car. Because when cell phones and the internet are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress we need AM Radio in cars.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
WATD's political forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
We're back in studio now with the First Plymouth District candidates. We've got Michelle Badger and Jesse Brown answering questions, and we're going to ask some more right now. And I'm going to go to the next one. This is a two-part question, and it backs on to something we had talked about earlier. And just out of curiosity, Jesse, what do you think is going to be the biggest issue that's going to bring voters to the polls in November?
Okay, affordability and the migrant crisis, hands down. Okay. That's what they're coming out for.
Okay, here's part two of that question. I'll ask you that too. What's the biggest issue that made you decide to run for office?
The affordability issue, number one. It's just, you see it out there. I mean, I work very hard, so it's not affecting me as much as other people, which I'm blessed for, but at the same time, I see that, and I want to go out there and make sure that people can strive to achieve, I mean, basically the American dream. What I achieved, I want them to still be able to have that.
Okay. Same question, Michelle. What do you think is the biggest issue that's going to bring voters to the polls in November?
Affordability is what I've heard on every door. The 5,600 doors we've knocked is affordability. How are they going to be able to stay there? How are their kids going to be able to stay in Plymouth? How, you know, in the middle of the road, how are they going to be able to stay and raise their family in a place that they love and they grew up in? So I hear a lot about that. And the other issue I hear a lot about is the environment. We've got a lot of environmental issues that are impacting Plymouth and are impacting all of the South Shore and all of Massachusetts. So those two are big. And for me, affordability was really what made me run. I really can't afford to live in Plymouth myself. I mean, I live with my family because it's cheaper for all of us to live together. My mom and dad, that is how we afford together. They're both retired. And for me, when I was paying my student loans off, and thankfully I'm done with those finally, but when you're trying to do that and you have all the other expenses to pay, it's impossible. And I'm really lucky that my family is in a position that there was a place for me to, you know, live in at their home. But affordability is huge, and I want to make sure that I help people thrive in Plymouth. I'm finally in a place where I probably could have afford to buy something, but the interest rates are really high.
Okay, let's now that I know what the big issues are with you guys, although I kind of knew beforehand, affordability, and you want to do something about it, tell me what you want to do specifically to help Plymouth become a more affordable community.
You know, I think a lot, talked about it already. We need to look at those municipal property places that municipality owns in Plymouth and say, there are places that we could purchase it as a state, do a combine with public-private partnership, and make it so that we have homes that are affordable for our young people, that are affordable for our seniors. We're now, Plymouth is a age and dementia-friendly community, and some of the talks have been about tiny homes and to make sure that our elderly population, and that could be any population living in a tiny home, but how do we make those people affordable? How do we make sure that we continue to keep our senior circuit breaker? That needs to stay. Seniors being able to work off some of the costs, and then looking at real 40, what is a 40B, and making sure that our state is, that we're looking at what's really affordable. 40Bs aren't really affordable. It's just a solution and a buzzword we've been using, and there's a lot of improvement that can be done on 40Bs and other affordable housing, and making our base rate of our income into that point where it's off of Boston.
Oh, I got my bell in. Okay. Same question, Jesse. What would you do to help make Plymouth more affordable?
We talked a little bit about this. It's the taxes, reducing taxes on a constant basis. I don't want to repeat myself, but it is going to be the same thing. We're taxed into oblivion here, and we need to reduce that. We go into the housing issue. It's about $600,000, and you have your construction costs, and it's price of materials that you need to bring down. That's a huge thing right there. The cost of labor is extremely high right now. The workforce is just not there to do that. I don't necessarily agree with, the state building housing for people. That's not something that I would go at. Again, you want to be as private. You want to have your own property. I think it's un-American for you to sit there and have the state own something that you're going to be living in. You want to be able to have your own at the end of the day. That's what, especially the people in Plymouth, you want to have your own properties to live in.
I'm glad you brought up 40B, because that was right at the top of my... So this is another one of those two-part questions, and I'm just going to jump ahead here, Tom, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'd like to ask you both. We do a lot of stories on the news about 40B and the MBTA Community Zoning Act. Mm-hmm. So what I'd like to ask each of you is, first, define each one, and then tell me whether or not you agree or don't agree with the way they're implemented and what you suggest. Let's start with you, Jesse. Yeah. 40B, you got a minute.
I disagree with 40B. It's basically unattainable to do it, but the biggest thing right there, it just bypasses everything. We can go on examples just in Plymouth alone. We can look at where a developer goes in, and there's definitely fights with that, and they'll just go 40B. So it gives them this carte blanche thing to do whatever they want at the end of the day, when maybe they are trying to do the right thing. They don't want to do that, but they are developers, and they have to make money. So it's giving something into a town, and it goes right into the MBTA communities. It's not a one-size-fits-all program for each community. Local zoning has to be brought back, and it has to be brought back to the towns itself. That you can't force something, and then at the same time you're going to have lawsuits being brought on the town by the state because you're not complying with something that they want to enforce on you.
And I'm just going to follow up and give you another minute on here. As we know, we've been following this. The revolution seemed to have started in Milton.
Correct.
And it passed down to other towns, including Marshfield, saying, no, we don't like this. And it seemed like the state was very quick to say, we are going to come after you.
Correct.
And they did. Are you surprised by that, that the state would say something like that, with towns which have usually handled a lot of this by themselves? You think that they would... You maybe want to work out some kind of a solution when a lot of these towns have been trying to do this on their own, put their own specific types of zoning rules to have affordable housing, to have more cluster development, more density. I was surprised by that the state was so quick to come after some of the towns with the threats of cutting off grant money, et cetera. Are you surprised by that?
I don't know if I'm surprised, but it's just what you just said right there. It's just kind of common sense not to do that. What, as a state, you're an elected official, and you're going after a town. Each individual town, as I said earlier, you want to have, it's not a one-size-fits-all program. So a town should be able to do what they want to do, and that's where the power should be. And when you're implementing something from the state, what's good in Cambridge is not going to be good in Plymouth at the same time, and vice versa. What's good out in Springfield will not be good in Plymouth. So you can't have that one-size-fits-all program. And again, am I surprised? Maybe some people that are elected, maybe not. That's That's why we have elections at the end of the day.
Now, you might feel like you're repeating yourself a little bit, Michelle, because you brought up 40B, which is good. What are your thoughts about that? It's, over the years that I've been here for decades, that's one of the most emotionally charged topics that we deal with.
Yeah, I mean, 40Bs are really, they're important because they do give a gateway into somebody being able to afford a home that maybe otherwise wouldn't be able to. But they also give you allow a developer to come in and do whatever they want. It does, you know, because they know that that's something that Plymouth that maybe hasn't reached that threshold. It hasn't reached the threshold where you keep 40Bs from just going wherever you want. So I think for me, it's really important that we're looking at affordable housing, maybe not through 40Bs in some other way, but what is really affordable in our housing is what needs to be done. The MBT Communities Act is really zoning, and right now we are an adjacent community. I would love to see us become a transportation hub for MBTA again. I think it's important for that part of Plymouth, and I know the Planning Board has had conversations about if it does happen, how do we make sure that maybe we're grandfathered in with the zoning that we are have overlaid in that area, that we've already done our piece of the MBTA's Communities Act.
Let me ask you both a follow-up again, then I'll go back to you, Tom. You brought up the question, too, about you're talking about a transportation hub. Do you think that Cordage Park train is ever going to run again? Michelle, would you work to make that happen?
I definitely would work to make it happen. I think it's important. We need more transportation opportunities for our seniors, for anybody who's going into Boston, who's coming out from Boston. Even if it's not for work, but it's just to go into Boston for a day of fun or medical appointments, that's really important. But we also have other transportation things we need to look at too, about a busing. Our GATRA doesn't go everywhere in Plymouth. It isn't, dial-a-ride isn't always, you can always rely on it. And so it's really important that we're looking at those transportation pieces, but we really do need to open that Plymouth up. And if we open it up, it needs to be used more than it was before. That's probably half the reason it wasn't as a successful hub, because they had like 3 trains a day, and that's not going to get you to and from Boston if you work, if you have 3 or 4 choices a day.
What do you think, Jesse? You think that train needs to be opened up again, and would you work to make that happen?
Well, I think we put enough money to them that, yes, it should be open 100%. So just going on that, the taxpayer money that's already going into that on a constant basis, it should be open just on that criteria alone.
Okay. Tom Gorman, questions for the candidates here of the 1st Plymouth District?
One of the ballot questions this fall is asking voters if they should eliminate the MCAS as a high school requirement. What are your thoughts about that?
Let's start with you, Jesse.
You know, I don't agree with eliminating the MCAS, and there's multiple reasons. There has to be a standard that's put out there for children to aspire to be. I know the arguments back and forth that it can, but it's basically unfair to kids right now, and it will increase inequality if you take away the MCAS. You want to bring the student to a certain area, making sure that he is literate and can graduate. You just don't want to hand out a diploma to anybody just because you want to come up with some different type of. There has to be a standard that everybody will abide by at the end of the day.
Same question, Michelle.
I'm all for eliminating MCAS. I think we need to continue keeping our high standards, which nowhere in this ballot measure does it say that we would eliminate our high standards. That's the one thing that the MCAS did do for the state of Massachusetts. It gave us consistent curriculum across the board. But it's a high-stake test that is a snapshot of a child on one day. It's a snapshot of a student who's really good at testing or a student who's not very good at testing. It creates a mental health issue for some of our students who already have high-level anxiety, and it just puts them in a place where that it's not assessing who they are or what they know. It's assessing what they know at that moment when they are in a high stress environment. And so I think we have a lot of assessments that go on. We actually just had a presentation last night at the school committee about our ELA assessments. There happen every few weeks to make sure that the students are meeting their reading benchmarks. And so we have lots of assessments, and there's assessments that will still continue to be done. And the MCAS will still be, because this doesn't eliminate MCAS, it just eliminates it as a standard for your graduation.
Okay, a train leaves Kansas City going 24 miles an hour. I'm sorry, just brought back some horrible memories of all those stories. Another quick question I wanted to ask you. We hear this word a lot, crisis. Climate crisis, social justice crisis, healthcare crisis. This is just stuff I grabbed out of the newspapers. Housing crisis, drug crisis, student debt crisis, migrant crisis, political crisis, etc. Do we really live in a time of so much crisis around us, or do you think that's an overused word? And do you believe these are all legitimate, Jesse?
I think that there is some validity to it. Crisis, you know, it's the media. At the end of the day, that everything's going to be exaggerated on a constant basis.
Yeah, blame
basis.
The press. Yeah,
right.
Okay, it's okay. You're but, free to speak here.
But it is. It's. But we do. I mean, if we want to name it, whatever we want to name it, we know people are in trouble. So if we name it crisis, it's getting somebody's attention, and it can bring our eyes to it. That's what we're going to call it, because there is a housing crisis right now. People aren't affording. People are getting kicked out. We talked about it all night tonight. When people are leaving the state, we definitely have a migrant crisis. That's hands down, again, the number one issue here. You know, as I read off earlier, it's the migrant crime. That's going to be the next crisis. It's going to be the migrant crime crisis. And again, that's why I say I'm a huge supporter of our law enforcement, and we have to continue our funding for our law enforcement on there, so we don't have a law enforcement or a public safety crisis out there. We need to make sure that funding goes to them at every level.
Michelle, what do you think? Are these all legitimate crises, or do you think there's any room for nuance? Is everything a crisis?
I don't know if everything's a crisis. We do have crises out there, but it's like crisis, pivot, and unprecedented. Those are like since the pandemic, I think those are the three probably most overused words in the media or just in general. But we do have a lot of big issues surrounding us. We have a lot of people that we have a lot of crises in mental health. We need to really invest in our mental health. We need to make sure that our public safety professionals have they are equipped to deal with what's happening. Policing has changed. Anybody in our public service has their jobs have changed. We have mental health issues, and we have people who are. We need to make sure that they're trained in a different way. Our teachers are being trained differently to handle students. Our police officers are being trained to handle it to differentiate when they go to different crises. And so I think it's really important that we continue to invest into our community to handle these crises and invest in our public safety and mental health. Those are huge issues that as a community, we all know we need to address.
Okay, we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk about drugs in the community, and we're gonna talk about Holtec and Pilgrim right after this quick break.
This is a message from the Hull Life Saving Museum. Get ready for an unforgettable evening at the Storm Riders Festival on Saturday, September 28th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Hull Life Saving Museum. It will be the perfect opportunity to gather with friends and neighbors for a night of fun and community spirit. The combination of great food, drinks, and music will make this an evening you won't want to miss. Tickets are $40 per person. Go to hulllifesavingmuseum.org.
In a world filled with chaos and stress, the only option is Everything Pumpkin. Behold the mighty pumpkin. It is more than just a gourd. And beginning September 29th, you can lose your gourd at UCC Norwell's Pumpkin Patch Paradise. Join us for our annual youth programming fundraiser beginning this Sunday at 460 Main Street in Norwell.
Hi, I'm Kelly with Veterinary Chaplaincy Services. Our mission is to support people after pet loss. If you're looking for support after losing your special companion, please visit our website at veterinarychaplaincy.com or call or text our new warm line at 833-4-VET-CHAP. That's 833-483-8247. 833-483-8247.
WATD's political forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
Thank you very much. That's right. We are back here in Studio B. The race is for the 1st Plymouth District. We've got both candidates in here, Republican Jesse Brown and Democrat Michelle Badger, hoping for your vote. Now, right before the break, we said we were going to come back and talk about drugs. That might sound a little racier than I intended. I know we had a good laugh about that at the break, but drugs, no laughing matter. Opioid epidemic, still a problem, although this area of the country, we're lucky because it seems as though we've taken a real initiative in reaching out and trying to make changes in the way addiction and recovery is handled. So tell me what your thoughts are about what to do about the opioid crisis. Are we heading in the right direction? What else do we have to do? Jesse Brown.
You're always moving forward, and you try to move forward in the right direction here. This crisis, as we just were speaking earlier too, it's the funding that it is going to our law enforcement. We see fentanyl coming into this into our area. It's coming in, you know, the main hub right there is Springfield, and it just dissipates all throughout the state right here. So we still have a tremendous issue, and leading back to the migrants coming in here, that's going to just exacerbate the issue, in my opinion. So we have to be very conscious of the, of every type of drug, but the fentanyl, which is extremely, extremely dangerous. I mean, you're talking the tip of a pin where that will kill somebody. And it just could be put in any kind of drug out there. It could be in an edible that your kids will eat. And I've had countless stories where I've talked to families that their children have passed away from a fentanyl overdose, and it's horrible. So we have to put the resources to that 100%, but the people that are recovering from that, we have to make sure right now, I think it's 30 days that they're getting in their recovery. It has to be a little bit longer than that. I think it goes 60 to 90 days that you need for that, for them to get a full recovery.
Same question, Michelle Badger. What can we do with the opioid crisis?
I think in Plymouth, we've been really lucky. Our police department really did some really innovative things. And I think that's one thing that Plymouth is known for, and one thing that I know on the schools we're known for and I've been really pushing, is that you need to be creative when you're thinking. And in Plymouth, you know, when we were at the pinnacle of our overdoses that we were seeing in our community, our chief of the police at the time said, you know what, we've got to go and follow up with these, and let's get some care around these people so that we can understand what's happening and get them to the services that they need to be able to hopefully, you know, become no longer use drugs. And so we did that. I think we need to continue things like that. We've got our PYDC in our schools. We're with a partnership in our community in Plymouth that brings all the stakeholders together to make sure that we're continuing to educate through a variety of different places. We need to also make sure that we have the beds in our recovery places, that we don't really have enough of those. We need to crack down on those who bring them in, but really, you know, educating them. And we do that with our revamped health education curriculum that I pushed for in the Plymouth Public Schools.
Tom Gorman, you had some questions about Holbrook and Pilgrim and what's going on with the cleanup down there.
Yes, of course, the ongoing cleanup is going on. The Pilgrim nuclear plant has been decommissioned. What are your thoughts about what's going on there and about Holtec wanting to discharge the radioactive water into the bay?
Okay, let's start with you, Michelle.
You could go on for like 30 minutes on that one, but what we really need to do is get a handle on what's happening, what it means when, so obviously we've got our bay that's an ocean sanctuary. We've got to put a stop to that as of now. And then what we need to do is continue to advocate to make sure that it doesn't get discharged into our bay at any point in the near future if they continue to have these legal disagreements. Then you also have, we have the current stored, the stored nuclear waste, and we also have the evaporated water, and we need to do more research on that. More sampling needs to be done. Independent samplings, I think, are really important. But we also need to make sure that we're coming to the table, at which they do, and talk to Holtec and make sure and bring us together so that we are making sure we know what's happening, that we can move them forward, because this can go on for decades and they could just continue to string the town of Plymouth along. But we need solutions and we need to know what's going to happen in order for our community to move forward.
Same question, Jesse. What do you think about Pilgrim and Holtec and everything going on?
I think the one thing we have, where, you know, they're regulated by the NRC, mm-hmm. and I think one thing with our current legislation that's there, the Bill Keating and our senators, that we already had 1 million gallons dumped into the bay over the years. So, and it's public knowledge, this isn't something mm-hmm. that I'm making up here. It's already been dumped into the bay. And now they want to dump approximately another million gallons into the bay. And I think, what did they say, around 200,000 has already been evaporated. As Michelle stated, though, too, the other issue with Holtec are the rods that are there. I drive past them every day. My house is right down the road from there, and I see them in their dry cast sitting there. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, I don't want them sitting there forever. They shouldn't be sitting there forever. There has to be a solution. So there are solutions, but everything becomes expensive. There are different solutions. You can ship the water off-site. That's a whole nother discussion. But it's not a one thing that happened. We have to be able to sit down and discuss and come up with a solution, but it's going to come down to money for everybody.
Okay. Which is a quick follow-up question, since we're talking a little bit about water. Are you worried about water and the future of clean water in Plymouth? Jesse, what do you think's going on there?
I mean, there's a lot of issues out there right now with the clean water. We talk about the aquifer. We have our septic issues that are out there. But also, you know, they have one thing where it's sand mining right now. And the research that I've done on it, and I'm still, I consistently learn on it, but it's one of our most extracted resources in the nation, mm-hmm. which I find hard to believe, which is sand. But that's to build in concrete what they do. So I think we need to limit the part of the sand mining, because again, when there's other options to go at, where we have one right now going down in Cedarville, which is very simple. You just have to keep hills there. You don't extract everything down. You're still gonna be able to build and put the industrial park down there, but maybe keep it hilly and not have to take the sand out of there. So that is one thing that we can do to protect our water sources.
Michelle, what do you think? What are you worried about water and the future of clean water and down in Plymouth?
Oh yeah, most certainly. I think we see it happening on the Cape. What could potentially happen here in Plymouth? That's, you know, the canary in the coal mine is over in the Cape. So we need to be paying attention. You know, Jesse mentioned the sand mining. It's important that we have the sand so that the water and anything can filter through, so that we can keep as much of the pollutants out of our aquifer. We have one aquifer. I have lots of friends who say, this is my pond. It's all coming from one place. So if something's happening over here, it's happening in another place. And we need to be really careful how we treat our drinking water and how we deal with our sand. Obviously, there's a balance. Like, we can't have no sand mining. We could have, you know, so we've got to be careful. But we've got PFAS going into our waters that, you know, you can't get rid of those. Those are your forever chemicals. And it only takes, I think it was 23 pounds, I believe, of the chemicals in there to make our drinking water not drinkable. And I can't remember what level we're at right now, but although, you know, desalinization is getting cheaper, it's not free, and it's not anything we want to have to do. So we really do need to worry about our water in Plymouth.
Okay. Did you have another question for the candidates? Okay. What I want to do is go to the lightning round, my favorite part of this, where we ask questions where it's either one or two sentences or a yes or no answer. And so we'll start with the lightning round. And you know what I'm going to ask you, because I asked this at the end of all of them, at least for this election cycle. Plymouth County government, stay or go?
Stay.
Okay. Jesse, Plymouth County government, stay or go?
I think I asked the answer this last time. Mm-hmm. It's stay, especially after the pandemic.
No, okay. I'd love some more words.
Here's a little different. Here's a little quick bonus. 20 seconds, something that I didn't ask you or Tom didn't ask you during the forum, and you wanted to say something unique about yourself that you felt that you didn't get a chance to say. Tell me what it is in 20 seconds.
Oh, that's a big one. You know, I think I've had an opportunity to go both of our sister cities, in both our sister city in England and our sister city in Shichigahama, Japan. And so I think it's, you know, for me, I'm deeply committed to the town of Plymouth, and I have been part of this community in so many different ways.
Okay, what's your 20-second elevator speech, Jesse?
Oh, I think I said it in the beginning. You know, there's a lot of different things that I'd like to talk about, but there's a lot of different issues. You know, one thing I do want to focus on in this is a big portion for me is our teen suicide, which is the second leading causes of our young people. So that's one thing that I would like to concentrate on too while I'm up at the State House.
Okay. Do you have a hidden talent, and what is it, Michelle?
I don't really think I have a hidden talent, but I play adult field hockey. I don't know if that matters.
Jesse, do you have a hidden talent you'd like to share with us?
I think I could eat a hot dog winning contest, eating contest. I can eat a lot. I can definitely eat a lot.
Okay. And in our tribute to Charles Mathewson, who we still miss dearly, yes. One of his favorite questions, you can tell he had, you know, studied advanced psychology. What's your favorite bad habit, Jesse?
I guess it goes back to food, eating potato chips.
Okay. Michelle?
I was just going to say handfuls of M&Ms.
Okay, all good choices. Okay, let's go to our closing statements. We're going to reverse the order here. We're going to start with Michelle. Again, it's 1 minute, and then we're going to go to Jesse. So, Michelle, your closing statement.
Thank you all for your time this evening. Thank you to Jesse for joining us here. I hope I've addressed your questions and provided a clear understanding of our campaign. I'm excited to continue to engage with everyone throughout this. And as your next state representative, I'm dedicated to this as a full-time job. I will continue to work hard and to bring harder than anyone to bring back resources to this district. I'm committed to the people of Plymouth, and that is why we've knocked on so many doors. I'll work hard every day for the people of Plymouth, as I have done for the last 13 years on the school committee. I'm running to be your voice. I will continue to listen and engage in conversations with all of you. And if elected, I'll be honored to serve and advocate for the first Plymouth district at the State House, to work hard to find solutions for the concerns and challenges that face our community. I'm fully committed and understand understand the time commitment that this role entails and look forward to working on behalf of and with all of you. You can find out more at badgerforplymouth.com and reach out to us at badgerforplymouth@gmail.com. I humbly ask for your vote on or before November 5th.
Thank you very much again. That was Michelle Badger. Your closing statement, Jesse Brown.
Well, thank you to everyone again, and thank you to all of our listeners, to WATD and our moderators for hosting this political forum. Being able to relate and understand firsthand the issues and struggles that our constituents face puts you in a position to make proper decisions. Having a representative with vast experience of real-life situations in different areas of life, whether it's struggles or successes, is an extreme benefit for this district. Growing up poor with a single working mother, enlisting in the Marine Corps at 17, working endless hours in the construction industry, being a dedicated father, creating and maintaining a successful business, consistently giving back to the community. Your vote for me will put a person in the seat that will represent your interests. I'm a hardworking, resilient, committed, dependable, common sense person, a proven leader who will get things done for the residents of Massachusetts. I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. I'm Jesse Brown, Republican nominee for state representative in the 1st Plymouth. I respectfully ask for your vote on or before November 5th. It will be an honor to serve the people of Plymouth. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was a closing statement for Jesse Brown. Again, these are the two candidates in the race for the 1st Plymouth District. This will be up on our website, this entire forum tomorrow. I want to thank Tom Gorman for asking questions with me tonight, for Charles Fomer for doing the timing, and of course our media partner, Local Scene PAC TV. Tell people to get out there. Make sure you get your vote in, and you can vote again. You can mail it in. You can do early voting. You can vote on the day like a traditionalist on November 5th. Stay tuned to WATD. We'll provide complete election coverage on that night with our election show. Remember, get out and vote. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James, 95.9 WATD.